The Columbia Workshop presents The Law Beaters by Richard Connell, adapted for radio by Stanley Young.
Pass over that bottle, Repton. Come on, pass it over before you drink it all.
Here, take it. It's poison. Even worse than the first bottle.
Ah, boy, it's dynamite, all right. But it kicks what we're after tonight, huh, Repton?
Yeah, it kicks what we're after. It ought to be good. Charge me $30 a bottle for this varnish.
Why the louse?
Imagine, the dirty, cheap thief. I hate a petty grafter.
Yeah, who doesn't? But he might have turned us down cold, you know. Looking at it one way, we're lucky to get even this rat poison.
Oh, stop being philosophic, Shree. Hey, give me that bottle again.
Just one swallow for luck.
Luck?
That pull bucked me up some. And here's a toast to you, for you, Repton.
Huh?
To the law of the land.
The law? Hey, that's good, that is. We got a lot of jokes in this crazy country, Shreve, but the law's the biggest laugh of any of them.
Well, you're a lawyer, aren't you?
Yes, and a good one. Hey, you're right. This liquor's beginning to take hold.
Well, that's good. You were pretty low a while ago.
Well, I don't feel exactly like turning cartwheels now. Yeah, you talk about the law. I tell you, Shreve, in my time, I've gotten away with a few things. Some fast ones.
Yeah, I'll bet you have. You look slick, all right. It's written all over you.
Thanks. But you don't have to be very smart. In this enlightened country of ours, the law goes around begging to be beaten.
Yeah, I know. But sometimes a fellow's foot slips.
Well, that's his fault. Stupidity.
Or just plain bad luck.
In a few cases, maybe. But usually, the guy who gets caught is just dumb. Anybody with even a slight trace of brains should be able to outsmart the police. You ever know any cops?
Yeah, a few.
Intellectual giants, weren't they?
Not exactly.
Of course not. If a man's got brains enough to be really a good cop, he'll be something else. Who but a mug would flatten his feet for 40 a week, or maybe 50, if he lives that long? And American detectives. What a hot lot of stumble bums they are. Well, they couldn't follow an elephant up a one-way alley.
Well, you may be right, but somehow the jails managed to keep pretty well filled.
What with? Green kids. Amateurs. Feeble old-timers. Where are the real high-class professional crooks in America today? In cells? No, sir. They're sitting around in cream-colored pants on the terrace of respectable country clubs. As free as air. Yeah. Planning new puzzles for the police to stub their 2x4 minds on.
Well, you're a lawyer, you ought to know. Still, the criminal courts always seem to have plenty of work.
The courts? There's a real laugh. Big-timers hardly think of the courts. To them, a trial's just a little inconvenience, like having a tooth fixed.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll take an instance. Suppose some burglar gets careless and, as he's leaving the scene of the crime, bumps into a policeman, wakes him up, and gets arrested. The newspaper boys play it up as a marvelous piece of scientific crime detection.
It's the old army game, I guess.
Sure. A column when the cops happen to bag a man. Half an inch when he gets away. But even if a criminal gets caught...
He's always got the lawyers.
Right. The wheels of justice begin to grind. And boy, can you hear them creak. It doesn't take much of a monkey wrench to wreck that setup.
Why, it's done every day.
Of course it is. Even if they bring a man to trial, what then? Chances are a smart lawyer can blow the district attorney right out of court, riddle the case with holes and technicalities that won't hold water if they do try to appeal. Well, look at the juries. What's a jury?
I can't tell you without gagging.
A dozen bright citizens who don't read the newspapers, who haven't any opinions, and whose opinions wouldn't be worth anything if they had them.
Sure, just a collection of fatheads.
Why, a smart lawyer could persuade them that cows fly.
Especially in a small town.
Sure. And with 12 people trying to get a unanimous verdict, one of them's sure to be a fellow who'll listen to reason for a few bucks and force a new trial.
Yeah, there's always one fellow who knows which side his toast is buttered on.
Every time. Yeah, but you gotta be born with your eyes open. I played it right. Hey, I'm getting a bun on from this fire water.
Yes, so am I. What does it matter, huh?
Well, here, give me another shot. Right. Yes, sir. The law's a laugh. I found that out. Hey, by the way, Shreve, what's your profession?
I live by my wits.
Meaning, I suppose, by other people's lack of them.
If you want to put it that way, yeah. After all, Repton, the world's divided into hawks and sparrows. You might as well be a hawk. I've lined my nest plenty.
From New York, aren't you?
Sure, the biggest heck town of them all. Don't you know about me?
You're not exactly a total stranger. Well, of course, the accounts I've had may be a little garbled. Hey, what are the facts? Well, you can tell me. One thing's certain, I'm not going to broadcast them.
All right, if you're curious. Liquor always makes me trusting. That's my weakness.
Well, I guess we've all got our weaknesses. But I don't know what mine is.
Well, I'll tell you. When they chucked me from college, my old man threw me out. My specialty at college was steering the rich little boys into a poker game and then steering myself out. I almost got a higher degree in racket.
That's good.
Well, after college, I had to do something, so I went into business on my own.
Yeah?
I always like to work alone. There's no profits to split, and there's no secrets.
Well, you've got the right idea.
Well, first thing, I did a little in the oilless oil stock line. So the federal dick almost landed me in the big stone schoolhouse, but not quite. After that, it was straight going. I piled up a lot of money. So much I could snap my fingers at the cops and the courts.
Well, what kind of games did you work?
Oh, some old and some new, but whatever they were, I never got bullheaded. I always worked out my plans to the smallest detail. And that's the only way.
Absolutely.
Yep. That's what I did in the biggest job I ever pulled. I figured every angle when I found out I had to do it. Wasn't in my line, but it had to be done.
I know. When you get in a corner, you got to get out.
Yeah, looking back on it, I guess it had to be done. Well, I was working an old racket.
Yeah?
You know, it's funny how simple-minded some of these successful merchants are. And putting on my society voice.
Hello, Mr. Craven speaking.
Oh, Mr. Craven. This is Mrs. Roger Rogers, secretary.
Oh, yes. How do you do?
Mrs. Rogers wants to select a diamond bracelet for her daughter's birthday.
We have a very splendid selection of diamonds just now. About what price would Mrs. Rogers think about?
Well, she wants the very best, naturally.
I'll have them laid out immediately.
Unfortunately, Mrs. Rogers can't come to your store. She's quite ill. Would you kindly send a selection of your finest bracelets to her home at 3 this afternoon?
Why, certainly. With pleasure. At 3.
Yes, you have the address, the Park Avenue home.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. I'll bring them over personally.
Thank you.
Twelfth floor for Mrs. Rogers, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Mrs. Rogers' apartment is the first to the right.
Thank you. Let's see, it must be down the hall here.
Yeah, here you. Where are you going, my man?
Why, I have a package for Mrs. Rogers.
Well, you should use the delivery entrance. What is it? I'm her secretary. She's resting and she can't be disturbed.
I'm the jeweler, Mr. Craven. You asked me
to... Oh, yes, yes, of course, the bracelets.
Yes.
Yes, I remember now. But I'll give them to Mrs. Rogers at once.
I should prefer to hand them to her myself. I feel that... Well, could I see her for only a moment, perhaps?
But I explained to you that she was ill. Just now she's sleeping. I wouldn't dare disturb her myself. Of course, if you don't wish to leave them now, it's quite all right. I think Mrs. Rogers will be most annoyed, however.
How long do you think it'll be before I could see her?
Well, I really couldn't say.
Well, I suppose it's all right. Will you sign this?
What is it?
It's a receipt for the jewels. It's just a form, but we have to do it, you know.
Oh, very well.
Thank you. That's fine. I hope Mrs. Rogers will be pleased.
Yes, I hope so. You'll hear from her. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Well, it was as simple as that.
Pretty slick.
Yeah, it was a lot my fault what happened after that. You know, I'm a sociable sort of fella, and I liked Harry Lannon. He moved into the apartment hotel where I lived in West 47th Street, right next door to me. He was a stranger in town from Los Angeles. And he liked a good time. And he had plenty of the stuff that good times are made of, too.
Yeah.
Well, we'd been hanging out together for a couple of months before Lannan got very confidential. You see, he was pretty well oiled at the time. In fact, I guess we both were.
You're a good fellow, Shreve. One of the nicest guys I ever struck up with. Now, maybe you don't know it, but coming from Harry Lannan, that means a lot.
Thanks, Harry. That goes for you, too, old boy.
I've been around, Shreve. I can size a fella up. I'm telling you, we speak the same language.
Sure.
I don't know what your racket is, and I'm not asking you. But I kind of figure maybe we could do something together sometime.
Maybe.
I've been playing tag with the coast cops. That's why I came east. You get it?
Why, not quite, Harry.
They didn't exactly like the signatures they found on some checks I passed.
Oh, so that's it, huh?
Yeah, that's it.
Say, is it a good racket?
Yeah, it's good if you know how. But there are a lot of angles. Say, who's that fella over that next table keeps staring at us?
Huh?
Hey, you! What are you gawking at?
What? Hello, Count! Well, that's a friend of mine, Harry. Hey, come on over here, Count. Come on.
Count.
Well, you old son of a guy. I haven't seen you in a month of Sundays.
How are you?
Shake hands with a friend of mine, Harry Lannan. Harry, this is the Count.
I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Lannan.
Same here. Come on, have a drink.
Well, thanks. As a matter of fact, I was just leaving. Shreve, can I speak to you a minute?
Why, sure.
I have a business with Shreve, Mr. Lannan. You'll pardon us, of course.
Sure.
Say, Shreve, you turned foolish or what?
What's the matter? Are you drunk, too?
That fellow with you. You know who he is?
Well, sure. He's a regular from the coast. Why? Lannan. Harry Lannan. I introduced you.
Lannan, my eye. Vogel's his name. Jason Vogel.
Vogel?
And the last time I saw him, he was making it pretty nasty for a friend of mine that tried to bring some diamonds into the country in a hot water bag.
A dick?
The cleverest one I know. And I make it my business to know, working the big liners the way I do.
Well, that's something.
He's his own agency. Works alone, mostly for the big Jewelers Protective Association.
Yeah?
If you're not sticking on the sunny side of the law, look out for him.
You must be wrong.
No, sir. I'm telling you.
Thanks for the tip, Tom. I must be getting back to my friend Vogel, alias Lannan. Hello. Well, Harry, old kid, how are you feeling right now, huh?
Swell.
Hey, listen, Harry.
Huh?
My friend, the Count, just tells me a couple of my old playmates, showgirls, are throwing a party tonight.
Woo!
Yeah, something damp and lively. How about you and me going home and climbing into our boiled shirts, huh?
You're a friend of mine, Shreve, and whatever you want to do is all right with me.
Well, come on.
Man, you were in a spot.
Why, I've been a fool. Been drinking a lot with him. No telling what I'd spill. I tell you, Repton, mixing business and drink is bad.
Yeah? Well, give me another drag on that bottle.
Yes, sir.
I've finished business for a while.
Well, we went straight back to his flat, and all the time I was doing some stiff thinking. And then I got the answer.
Yeah?
While he was in the bathroom shaving, I gave his clothes a quick frisk just to check up. And there, sure enough, sewed in the lining of his coat was his detective license. Name Vogel, everything.
Uh-huh.
Not only that, there was a record of my operations with dates and places and the fact he'd spotted a couple of diamond and ruby brooches salted away in my room.
Well, that's what I call a jam.
Oh, he had me, and he had me right. Felt sure I could beat the charge, but it would cost me important money to do it.
Oh, what'd you do?
I took out a little .32 automatic with a silencer on it, opened the bathroom door quietly, and shot him.
That was a crazy thing to do. Too crude.
Oh, was it? Now, listen. First, I made sure he was dead. Then I got hold of the records about me. I burned them and scattered the ashes out of the window.
I see.
And next, I unscrewed the silencer from the gun, slipped it into my pocket, and I put the gun in his right hand.
Well, did you know he was right-handed?
Yeah, I made sure of that. And I went out, letting the door lock itself behind me. But before I went, I opened his bathroom window just about 6 inches.
What for?
I'm coming to that. I told you, I always work things out in advance. This had to be perfect. I walked out of the building. I went to a store over on Broadway and bought something. And I come back. I dropped in on the hotel manager, who thought I was a Wall Street man, by the way. And I talked with him a while. I asked him how about coming up to my place for a little game of bridge that evening. And he was nuts about the game, see, and he jumped at the chance. Said he'd get two other places. I never seem to get a hand worth bidding.
I'll put your cards down, partner. I want to see if I've got any help there.
Yeah, it's a real dummy hand. Certainly picked a partner. Say, will you excuse me a moment, boys? I'm going to wash my hands.
Sure thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Nice fellow, Shreve.
What's his business?
Oh, Wall Street, I think. Must do pretty well. Always seems to have a role.
Well, I hope there are more roles downtown than there are uptown.
Yeah, this man Shreve, though, is one of the nicest guests I ever had in a hotel. Nothing high hat about him, you know.
Say, you're doing fine, partner. You're going to make that, no Trump.
Well, looks as though... Say, what was that?
Sounded like a gun.
Next door, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. That's Harry Lannon's room.
We better take a look. Door's locked. Wait a minute. I've got my master key.
Hey, look. Good Lord, Lannon shot.
Is he dead?
Well, let me look at him. Looks bad. What do you know about that? He's a dead man. I guess we'd better call the police. Looks like suicide to me. Funny. He always seemed like such a good-natured, happy kind of man.
Yeah. Poor fella.
I'm sure sorry for him. But if he had to do it, I wish the devil he'd pick some place besides my hotel.
I still don't see how you did it, Shreve.
You remember? I told you I left Lannon's bathroom window up 6 inches?
Yes.
Well, it was a narrow area way across to my bathroom, not more than 4 feet.
Yeah?
I lit a firecracker with a long fuse and tossed it in.
No kidding.
Sure, I was back playing bridge with 3 witnesses to the fact when the shot was fired.
Well, how about the pieces of firecracker?
I took care of those. With a dead man before them and a room filled with the smoke of powder, no one paid any attention to me. So I slipped into his bathroom, picked up the pieces, and shoved them in my pocket. It was simple.
Neat. Plenty neat. I gotta hand it to you.
This wasn't bad for a beginner, I thought.
No, sir. Hey. Look at the time. Way after midnight.
So what?
Well... so nothing, I guess.
Say, you got a story too, haven't you? You might as well come across with it.
Yes, I've got a story. I suppose I might as well tell it.
Why not? Here, let's have another drink.
Okay.
All right. Come on, let's hear it.
Well, I had to eliminate a man too. I had no more feeling about it than I would crushing a spider. Sometimes I think he was born into the world for no other reason than to give me trouble. We started out being partners. Andrew Erskine and I.
Well, you must have liked him then, didn't you?
No, never. But he was clever as sin.
I get it.
I never trusted him as far as from here to there. And I woke up one day to find that even that was too far.
Yeah?
You see, we'd been promoting a little company together with the general idea of skimming the cream and leaving the stockholders with nothing but the blue milk. But once, when I was off in Albany, Erskine walked off with the spoils and left me holding the bag.
Sounds like a smooth worker.
Smooth? That bird would have made marble look rough. I swore I'd get him someday. Yeah, but he kept getting richer and fatter and more powerful and... every time I tried anything, he sneaked in a punch below the belt.
Right, a dirty rat.
Well, I was afraid of Erskine, I'll admit.
That's probably why you hated him.
Probably. Anyway, everyone in Blandsburg knew we were enemies. If anything violent had happened to Erskine, fingers would all have pointed straight at me.
Were you down and out all this time?
No. I was doing pretty well at that, in spite of Erskine. But I wasn't in on the big kills. Then I got this idea about water power operations. I worked on it 6 years, put every dime I had into it. And just as I got it where I wanted it, one man was blocking my way. Andrew Erskine. There was only one answer.
Erskine had to go.
Right. Erskine had to go. Well,
that's pretty hard to manage in a small town.
I found that out. I plotted and thought and plotted again. Finally, I hit on an idea. What does a good executive do when a job has to be done for which he hasn't the technical training? Why, he hires an expert, of course.
You picked a tough line to find an expert in.
That took some hunting. I went to Chicago, where I didn't know a soul. Hung around the dives. I spent money like water and kept my eyes and ears open. So pretty soon I struck up an acquaintance in a bar with a fellow who tipped me off to a man in the business.
A real gunman, huh?
Yeah. The funny thing was, he didn't look very tough. He was well-dressed and small, with a kind of white, pinched face. Or dope, I guess. I couldn't believe he was a gunman at first. But after I talked to him... Hey, they say you're a fellow I ought to meet.
Yeah, why?
Well, I've got some business you can handle.
What kind of business?
Cash business.
Who are you?
Well, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. Money's the name I'm using right now.
Come on in here where we can talk private. Okay, spill it.
There's a man in upstate New York I don't like.
Is he a big shot?
Big enough.
What's his business? Not a government man, is he?
No, nothing like that. He's a businessman. Andrew Erskine of Blandsford, New York.
I never heard of him, or the town either. Is he guarded?
No, but he's a tough customer.
When?
What?
When do you want him bumped off?
Say, you kind of jumped to conclusions. I want him out of the way as soon as possible.
It'll cost you $6,000. Three now, three when the job's done. Cash.
Oh, that's pretty high.
That's why I'm in the business.
All right, it's a deal.
Andrew Erskine, Blandsford, New York, right?
Right.
Got the dough?
Yes. All right, here. Do you need to know anything more?
Well, we meet when it's over, that's all.
I'll come out here.
Okay. Here's an address where we won't be spotted.
Ike Mance. That's your name?
Yeah, what's yours? The right one, mister.
Repton. I live in Blandsford, too.
All right, Mr. Repton. Watch the newspapers. You might find something of interest.
Well, Shreve... I went to French Lick Springs and played golf with a party of Albany businessmen. If Andrew Erskine died suddenly, I intended to have plenty of good witnesses who could swear I was hundreds of miles away from the scene of the tragic event.
You certainly had it figured out.
I'll say I did. Well, 4 days after I left Ike Mance in Chicago, I read in a New York newspaper a headline I'd been looking for. Death of Upstate Capitalist.
It didn't say murder?
And this fellow Mance was a capable man. The police, the story said, were mystified by the death of Andrew Erskine. He'd been found in a roadster which had hit a tree and been smashed up some, but the car was hardly damaged enough to account for the violent injuries which caused Erskine's death.
Boy, those cops, when they start scratching their fat heads, they can think up some real fairy story.
Yeah, they called it a queer accident and let it go at that. 2 days later, I went to Chicago to meet Ike Mance and pay him off.
Well, you took a chance there, Repton. A tough baby like that wouldn't exactly shy off from blackmail. While he lived, he had a hold on you.
Oh, I had a hold on him, remember? Now, here's what happened. Great. You were certainly the man for the job, Ike.
I've done better. Well, let's have the dough, Repton.
Say, This isn't exactly private.
It's all right. Nobody knows me here.
Well, I don't like it. There's something about money changing hands that gets people curious.
What's the matter? You getting scared?
A little.
Well, where do you want to go?
Let's drive out into the country a little. I got my car out here.
Okay, but not very far. I got another appointment.
Killing?
No, no. Just bruising the guy up a little. Memory jogging.
Well, we'll be back in half an hour. Is that all right?
Sure. Hey, where are you taking me? Back to Blandford?
Well, there's a little side road right here.
Business guys are certainly cautious. I took this much trouble, I'd never get anything done.
We've got to be cautious. Our reputation is everything.
Well, how about me? Don't you think I got any pride?
Oh, no doubt you ought to have. You're a fine workman.
Oh, thanks. You know, once I polished off a guy, kind of a big slob, yeah, like you. You know what, I...
Hey, you see that spot over there?
What spot?
That spot, killer.
So, you got rid of him too, Repton.
That was part of my plan from the first. Mance might never have let out a peep, and then again, he might have.
Yeah, you never can tell what a hophead may do.
Well, that's what I figured. Mance had to go out of the picture.
What'd you do with him?
I rolled him into the ditch and then went back to town.
How about your car?
I rented one. I used another name, of course.
Boy, you're a thoroughgoing son of a gun.
Well, I figured I'd left no loose threads. I had the perfect alibi as far as Erskine was concerned, and there was no way of connecting me with Mance. Well, his death wouldn't cause much of a flurry. But with all the gang wars out that way, the police are expecting a fellow like Ike Mance to get knocked off.
Yeah, and they don't worry much when he is.
Exactly. No, I tell you, the whole thing went through without any flaw or slip-up, so far as I could see. I turned in the rented car and took the express east for Blandford.
Yeah, I don't see any holes in it. Not a hole. I thought I was pretty clever, but that beats me. Have another drink?
Yeah, I need one. Pass the bottle. Hey, be careful.
Lord, you done it now. It smashed to pieces.
What are we going to do now, Shreve?
We're going to sit here and wait.
Wait? Wait for what?
You ought to know what by this time. There wasn't much liquor left anyway.
It would have helped most of all right now.
What are we going to do?
Pull yourself together, Repton. It won't be long. I just heard a cock crow.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord, they come for us at daybreak.
You're telling me?
Will it hurt? You think it'll hurt much, Shreve?
No, not much, just... One's shock and it's all over. It doesn't even burn, they say.
Who says? How does anyone know? Listen. They're coming. Shreve, there's the priest! They're coming!
Let them come. Let them come. I'm ready.
You have just heard the Columbia Workshops presentation of The Law Beaters, a story by Richard Connell, adapted for radio by Stanley Young. Mr. Young is the author of two recent Broadway plays, Robin Landing and Bright Rebel. The production was under the direction of Norman Corwin. The part of Shreve was played by James Van Dyke, and Repton was played by John Griggs. Next Monday night, the workshop will not be heard, for at that time we will broadcast the address of the president. The next production of the Columbia Workshop will be given on Monday night, May 29th at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time, when the workshop will present a special Memorial Day program featuring Private Throg. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.